This is part three to the sermon series that we've been going through on relationship boundaries. I want to just quickly recap part one and part two. In part one, we explored how God is a boundary relationship setter, or a relationship boundary setter is what I meant to say. And while he sets boundaries on what others can do on his property and around him, he doesn't force anyone to do anything. He allows them free choice, free will. However, we saw that God not only communicated consequences for breaking boundaries, he then enforced those consequences for breaking boundaries. And we spoke about what's within our property in words, in other words, what's me and what's not me. Then in part two, we dove into the difference of being responsible to other individuals versus being responsible for others. We looked at the two different Greek words contained in Galatians 6 and verses 2 and 5, and how each of us are expected by God to carry daily responsibilities. And we talked about that from the Boundaries book of being a daily backpack that we're supposed to carry. We're the ones responsible for it. It's a carryable load. And then we also looked at the other Greek word that was about a heavy, oppressive weight to someone, like we envisioned a boulder that is about to crush somebody. It's not expected that they can carry it. It's uncarryable. It's excessive. And we looked how God expects us to step in and help those individuals when that type of situation comes up in someone's life. We looked at the principles of sowing and reaping from the Bible, and also the responsibility to take action in our lives. And then finally, we briefly talked about how God created us to have boundaries, and we explored just briefly our first boundary word we often use in life, which is no. And we finished by looking at the difference between hurting someone and harming someone. That someone can have hurt feelings, but that is different than injuring them or doing them harm. So today, I'm going to be doing both part three and part four of this series as we bring it to a conclusion. So here's part three. In part three, we're going to look at a brief look at boundary development in our lives. We're going to dive into five types of boundary injuries that can occur over our lifetimes. And then we're going to look at four common boundary problems that people can have. So that'll be what takes us through part three. And then we'll pause for another hymn. So area one today is boundary development. Boundary development. A lot of study has gone into how each of us develop our boundaries, and how then those boundaries or that development impacts our ability or inability to set boundaries or respect boundaries. Now, it's not my intention to dive deep into that development in a very detailed way, but I really don't see that we can talk about the wholeness of boundaries without at least briefly touching on sometimes our backgrounds and our lives and how we are a product of those backgrounds and upbringings and how they impact our ability or inability to set boundaries. We have to recognize that every family is different and no family is perfect, but also not all families are the same. When I was thinking through this, I envisioned, you know, a continuum, a line from 0 to 100, where you have every type of family that falls onto those lines. And all of us and our parenting and their parenting and your great grandparents and continuing fell somewhere on that spectrum of 0 to the perfect parents out there at 100. Again, there are no perfect parents. Even the best of parents are flawed in various ways. I know even in my own parenting, I was intentional. I was present. I loved my children. But then when I look at these boundaries, I see areas where I made mistakes, where I had flaws as parenting. Where I held certain ideals that I now see, oh, those ideals weren't best. And my children are a result of all that parenting, both from myself and my wife, and the good and bad that comes from that. So when it comes to boundaries and our struggle to either set them or enforce them or our struggle to respect them, it's important to think for a little bit through our backgrounds. Let's just take one kind of early development of a background, or development of a child, which is ownership. Ownership. So when our children were little, other children would come over and they would play with them. And they'd be at our house with our children's toys. And, you know, they might come up to your child and they might snatch a toy right out of your child's hands, right? That's common of children as they're learning what's theirs, what's not theirs, how to share. And we might say to our child, oh, it's okay that they snatch that toy. Just go find another toy and play with something different and let them have it, right? And as a parent, you might think, well, that's the loving. I'm teaching my kid to share. That's a good quality they need to have in their life. But then we can also look on the other side and we can say, well, yes, it's important to teach our children to share. It's also important to teach our children not to be doormats, that people can't just do whatever they want to them and that they just have to, you know, take it, so to speak. We have to teach them to have ownership over their bodies, over their things, over their space, etc. We often view a child in that early stage that says mine or it's my toy. We might see initially that to be kind of a selfish attitude. Oh, you know, why are you saying mine? And why are you saying, you know, it's your toy? But if we teach children to have no ownership over their belongings and their things and themselves, they develop problems later in life. Even God declares his ownership over lots of things. In the Bible, God says, the earth is mine. He says, the heavens, the world, all of its fullness is his. Wealth, riches, cattle, silver, gold, every animal of the forest, all the birds of the mountain, the wild beasts of the field, says all of them are his, right? He shows his ownership over what's his. And then in Genesis 1:26, Adam and Eve were given dominion. They were given ownership over certain things, and they were to take responsibility for the things that fell under that dominion. So children have to be taught that throughout their development, what's theirs, what they have the responsibility over, to take care of it, to pick up after it, and that kind of thing. And then they have to be taught also alongside that ownership, the joy of sharing, the joy of giving, the joy of loving others. But without understanding first and foremost, what's me, what's my, what's mine, we don't have any understanding then later in life of, you know, what's our time, what's our energy, what's our values, what's our talent, what's our feelings, behavior, money, belongings, etc. And we talked in the last sermon again about that first boundary word, no. I want to hit on that just a little bit again, that first boundary word we learn. No helps children to separate from what they don't like. It gives them power to make choices. It protects them. Parents will often remember, all of you who had kids, that usually at some point in your kid's early life, when they learned the word no, they became a no addict, right? They would say no about things they even liked just to exercise their power to say no. Do you want this grape? No. You know, even though they love grapes. But the point was, they were exercising their power to say, I control me and my space and that newfound freedom. And they will say no to even things they really love and enjoy. And it's a beginning stage of a person not feeling powerless or helpless. So they embrace it and value it even over things, again, they would normally want. Now, good parents will understand that this is a part of the development process and not pull back emotionally and withdraw or harshly respond to a child when they use the word no. Now, I want to make a clear kind of other side. We're not talking about giving in to tantrums. We're not talking about no discipline. God's word is clear that we have to discipline children in their life. So please don't misunderstand that I'm not trying to say that limits in child rearing aren't important. Behavioral lines and boundaries should not be crossed without age-appropriate consequences being put in place. However, it should be done without emotionally withdrawing from a child, what we call disconnection. And we make mistakes here sometimes, even with the best intentions. For example, imagine a new little child comes to church and the parent or somebody wants a hug from that child, right? That's normal. Want to express their love to that child, but that child does not want to hug that individual that either they don't know or don't know well. Because in that child's mind, they probably feel a little weird about that. Maybe they feel even unsafe in that. But a parent, sometimes out of our own embarrassment, we might feel bad that our kid's not hugging this person that just wants love from our child. So we might lean down in their ear and we might whisper, if you don't hug them, you're not getting any dessert from the snack line today, right? And we might enforce a consequence that forces them to go beyond the boundary that they feel safe and secure in and give that hug anyway. And so they're in that moment, they're inadvertently taught that they can either have a boundary there or they have to let others do things that they aren't comfortable with. And the boundary book that I've been referencing several times again by Cloud and Townsend, this book says that by 3 years old, a child should be developing three things, working toward and developing and mastering three things that impact boundaries. One, the ability to be emotionally attached to others, yet without giving up a sense of self and one's freedom to be apart. So be able to attach to others emotionally, but still have a sense of self and a freedom to be apart. And then two, the ability to say appropriate no's to others without fearing a loss of love. So the ability to say appropriate no's to others without fearing a loss of love, and the ability to take appropriate no's from others without withdrawing themselves emotionally. So somebody can tell them no, and they're not going to withdraw emotionally. So it was saying those are three things that a child should be developing and mastering by age three. And obviously, those skills then go from childhood into adolescence, into young adulthood, into adulthood, and whatever impacts those then shape us as adults. So then area two that I'd like to discuss about is boundary injuries that can happen in our lives. Again, because all of us parents are imperfect, certain injuries occur in these areas and they can then impact us the rest of our lives. Boundary injury number one, withdrawing from boundaries. When someone sets a boundary and another person, such as a parent, pulls away or withdraws from them as a response, maybe, you know, they're hurt, they're disappointed, they're angry, and they send a message to that individual, that child, when they're trying to set a boundary: you are lovable when you do what I want, and you are unlovable when you don't. The child learns to do what others expect. I'm good. If I do what they want me to do, I'm good and I'm loved. When I put up a boundary and they don't like it, and they pull away, I feel bad. I'm cut off from their love. And it's a form of kind of emotional blackmail that can occur to get you to do something. You know, I'm only going to give you love when you do what I would like. The child can then either pretend not to disagree and to go on to pretend to like things that they don't like, or to keep, and they do that in order to keep the relationship solid and strong, or they can choose to lose what at that time in a child's life, it's their most crucial relationship in their whole world is their parents at that time. And most children at that stage will choose to keep quiet and to go along with what that situation is in order to be loved and to receive that continual loving feelings from their parent. The child learns to hide their feelings and responses that a parent doesn't like. So instead of pulling away and withdrawing emotionally, a parent can respond, I know you're angry, but you still can't have that toy. The child is allowed to have feelings, but others aren't controlled by their feelings. And more importantly, the parent still is there loving the child in spite of their anger and their emotions or whatever they're going through. But the parent is always still present with love, even if they, you know, won't give in to whatever, you know, the child wants. And the parent applies appropriate consequences for actions, behaviors, responses that are inappropriate, but again, without a loss of love in that moment. Parental emotional withdrawal can be subtle. It can be simple things like hurt tones and voices every time you disappoint them, long silences, or it can be things that are overt, crying spells. Some people will even have kind of an onset of an illness that comes when they're disappointed from a child. So they get almost sick from it. And so a child then learns to respond to those responses of the parent. Children in these situations often grow up to be afraid, even terrified of setting boundaries in relationships because they fear either isolation or abandonment. Boundary area injury number two, hostility against boundaries. So this is not withdrawal, emotional withdrawal. This is hostility against the boundary that is set. It doesn't have to be a male. It can be anyone, you know, a male, a female. But imagine a family where dad's rule is law. No one's allowed to feel different. Nobody's allowed to voice a a different opinion. Dad's rule is what's going to happen, and you better like it. Hostility can take the form of angry words, yelling, belittling, name-calling, demeaning talk, physical punishment, and inappropriate consequences. We understand that God designed children to be under authority and control of their parents. Discipline is designed by God to be a teaching tool, to teach self-control by using consequences for irresponsible behavior and actions, which again teaches them to hopefully make responsible choices. A phrase again like you'll like what I or you'll do what I say and you'll like doing it, you know, goes too far. A child is taught to conform and pretend to avoid hostility. Instead, they should be taught, you're not always going to like what I ask you to do, but there are times you're going to have to do it anyway, and you have a choice. If you don't want to do it, here are the consequences for not doing it. But it's not done in, you know, over aggression and that type of thing. You know, all of us have to do things we don't like to do sometimes from the authority above us, but they need to be taught that. Other negative examples would be like, if you disagree with me, I'll teach you a lesson you won't soon forget. You'll do it my way or else. Why are you acting that way? You have no reason to feel bad in this situation. You're just being a spoiled brat. Instead, good parenting encourages through, again, you have a choice. The choice is either going to bring good consequences or the choice is going to be bring bad choices, but it's your choice. The bad choices, though, should not be, or the bad consequences should not be, again, emotional withdrawal and abandonment, angry hostility. God taught through freedom of choice, blessings and cursings, and they were meant to teach self-control. Yet God loved us even when we were yet sinners, right? God was still a loving Father always to us, even when we were off course. Our love should be constant, even within discipline. Boundary injury number three, over-control. This one's short. I think we understand what that is. Over-control is when a loving parent tries to protect the child from making mistakes by having overly strict rules and limits. So as a child then grows, they will learn to either bust through the boundaries, and that boundaries must be broken, or they learn to be prisoners within those boundaries, and they lose themselves by living a life that's under the control of others. Boundary injury number four, the opposite of that. A lack of all controls, a lack of control, a lack of parental boundaries. Anything goes. This is the other ditch. Now there's no rules. The parent picks up all the toys that the kid leaves out all the time. The parent puts more money into the 17-year-old's checking account every time they have no money because they spend it on things that they didn't need to buy. And while that has the appearance of love and self-sacrifice, it doesn't teach the child about their personal responsibilities, about their daily backpack and those consequences. So a child grows into being somebody irresponsible. As we discussed in part two of the series, God created the principles of sowing and reaping. And if a parent interrupts that sowing and reaping process by paying the consequences for a child, then they grow into adults who don't take responsibility for their choices, expect others to step in, carry their backpack, save them out of their trouble. And unfortunately, typically what happens is as we go from being a child, those consequences only get more severe, worse, and more, you know, sadder when somebody has to pay more serious consequences as they become adults. And you can have parents that then toggle between both of these. At times they're overly strict, and at times anything goes. And obviously you can imagine that would create a very mixed signal to children. The last one I'd want to talk about, though, with boundary injuries is trauma. Trauma. I think we typically understand what trauma is. Trauma is an intense, emotional, painful experience. All forms of abuse are traumatic. They could also include things like accidents or serious illnesses that individuals go through. In the book, again, Boundaries, it talks about it envisions like a growing tree, and that's supposed to be your child, a growing tree. And it talks about that the tree needs things, right? It needs nutrients, it needs water, it needs food, it needs sunlight. And it talks about in all these boundary problems, withdrawal, hostility, overly strict, underly strict, that all these is some imbalance in the feeding of this tree. And that tree is going to suffer to whatever degree that's out of balance. Because, you know, a tree needs a certain amount of nutrients, sunlight, water, and everything to survive. But then it says trauma is like a lightning strike to the tree. And it talked about the fact that it's especially damaging in two ways to children. It rocks their world in a sense in that it, one, it tells the child they used to believe the world was reasonably safe. And now they have a fear that the world is not reasonably safe from that trauma. And two, they used to believe they had some control over their lives, and that traumatic event makes them now feel they have no control over their lives. Now, we have to also understand that not everything of who we are as adults is because of something our parents did to us. My two girls came out vastly different people from genetics right out of the womb. They were two very different people. And then we live our lives. And within our lives, we reap the impacts of those through choices we make, sinful actions, lusts we give into, you know, different things, our desires, our thoughts, addictions that we develop that have an impact on our lives as well. So not everything's parental, but there are things that, depending on what our parents were like, and their parents were like, that will impact us as people. So then I want to move away from kind of boundary injuries to now talking about four types of boundary problems. I'll call this area three, just simply boundary problems. The Boundaries book brings out four primary types, although there can be combinations of these as well. Four types of boundary problems, and these really even the four get bucketed into two groups of two. One of those two main groups where it has two in it is a problem where individuals have problems setting boundaries. So they have a problem delineating, marking off their property lines, and those property lines are not clearly marked. So problem setting boundaries. The next two that we're going to look at are problems where individuals have problems respecting the boundaries of others, the limits that others put in place, what we might call trespassing. So one, again, problem setting limits, another respecting those limits. So we're going to look at two of each of those. So type one under these boundary problems is what's called in the book compliance. Compliance. It's saying yes to the bad. And that might be a good way to write it down. Saying yes to the bad. We again talked about how children have to be able to say no. I don't like that. I will not. I choose not to. Stop. That hurts. That's wrong. That's bad. All of us have to do that in our lives. Be able to set a boundary that, no, that is bad. I'm keeping it out. Stop. Compliance have boundaries that are not clearly marked. Sometimes they're referred to as fuzzy boundaries. They may have where they wish that boundary would be in their mind, what they don't like, what they don't want, but they melt into the desires and demands of others. They struggle to stand up for their boundaries. They don't like to rock the boat. They usually try to minimize their dislikes, their differences, try to blend in, try to pretend to say the same things, like the same things, just to get along. When they feel they can't say no to the bad, they can let evil into their lives because they don't say no where they need to, and so therefore, things that shouldn't come in, come in. Many compliants realize too late they are in dangerous and abusive relationships. When situations arise where they should say no, they feel they just can't. They can't say no. And that's typically driven from fear. We're going to look at a number of, just real quickly, I'm going to just say seven types of fear that can typically make them where they feel like they can't say no. One, fear of hurting others. Fear of hurting others. Fear they will be abandoned or alone if they say no. Fear of anger. Fear of punishment. Fear of being shamed. Fear of being seen as bad or selfish. And the last one, fear of being unchristian or unspiritual. Often, not only do you have fear involved, you have guilt involved. Guilt drives them sometimes to say no instead of saying, or from saying no to saying yes, because they're guilty that, I'm going to hurt so-and-so's feelings. A good test for any yes that you want to give, somebody asks you to do something and you're going to put a test there to say, is my yes a good yes, or is it driven out of fear or guilt? Is, do you have a heart for whatever's, a heart of love toward whatever you're being asked? So, I ask you, can you take over this new project at church? Are you doing it because you feel guilty telling me no? Are you doing it because you're fearful that I'll take you off the speaking schedule? Are you, is that your motivation? Or is your motivation that, no, I actually would like to help in this. I want to be useful. And so your heart will tell you, is it fear? Is it guilt? Or no, I want to do this. And that's a test that we can apply. Often before we take up offerings, we read the scripture, 2 Corinthians 9:7. I'll quote that here, 2 Corinthians 9:7. It says, So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity. Why? Because God loves a cheerful giver. That's where God wants the motivation to come from. Check your heart. Are you doing it grudgingly or out of necessity? Or is this springing from your desire to give to God, right? God doesn't want us to give out of necessity or grudgingly, a word that means sorrow, pain, or heaviness. And this, again, can be a test of whether we're doing something out of fear or guilt or out of love. The second type we're going to talk about of that have trouble setting boundaries is avoidance. So instead of the compliance that say yes to the bad, avoidance say no to the good. No to the good. This is the inability to let good into your life. Inability to accept someone's offer to help you. To admit you have needs and places where people, you need help with the boulders of life. When in need, an avoidant will withdraw from those who can help them. They won't ask for help even when there's some out of the blue boulder that just landed in their life. They don't want to let others into their world, into their, into their property. And so they will block out those that want to help. At the center of this is an overstrict, sense of property lines. This is my property. It's my problem. I'll deal with it. Property lines, we've talked about often being fences and walls around our property, right? But property lines all have what? Driveways, door gates that open at the front of your, property. If you imagine a castle and you got your walls, but then you got a moat, or in a drawbridge that comes down over the moat, lets who you want in, right? Avoidance have walls, but no doors. There's no way in for the good. God created us to have the freedom to enjoy good, positive relationships. We were designed as relational people, but we are also designed to keep the bad out. God doesn't force even his relationship on us. You'll remember back when we were going through the seven churches of Revelation in that series, that when we got to Laodicea, it represented Jesus Christ as standing at the door and knocking. Did he barge into their property? No. He knocked. He wanted them to have a relationship with him. He wanted them to open the door and let him into their lives. But he didn't force that upon anybody. They had to respond. They had to choose to open the access and allow him to come in. God shows time and time again that he gives freedom of choice. He doesn't force anything upon us, even if he desires that we would allow him in. It's our responsibility to open. For an avoidant, even a relationship with God can be challenging at times. Sometimes they'll block God out when they should let God fully into their lives. Now, someone can actually be even both of these first two things. They can both be a compliant and an avoidant. Someone can give hours that they don't have to other people when they should say, frankly, I can't do all these things. And they can give all this hour, hours to other people out of guilt or fear. And then they can reject the help that someone offers to help them in their lives. They can say yes to the bad and no to the good in their life. Those type of people often are said to have reverse boundaries. They have walls where they should have doors, and they have doors where they should have walls. Now, both of these first two types that we briefly covered are people who have problems either setting a boundary appropriately, or again, putting a door in their boundary to let the good in. But now let's talk about two types that have trouble respecting boundaries. Two that have trouble respecting boundaries. Type three today is controllers. Controllers, or not respecting boundaries of others. Controllers have a problem hearing and accepting the boundaries of others. A no from someone is simply a challenge to try to change that person's mind. This is a boundary problem of control. Controllers don't respect the boundaries or limits of other individuals. They often even fail to take responsibility for their own lives, but they like to take the responsibility over other people's lives. They tend to project their daily backpack, their daily responsibilities onto the lives of other individuals. They may want others to carry their daily load and backpack that God, again, intended them to be responsible for. It's not that they can in their own lives say no, but that would be like the compliance, but they can't hear or take no from others. And these controllers fall into two categories. The first category is aggressive controllers. These people run over people's boundaries like tanks, like they're not even there. They don't listen to others. They're sometimes verbally abusive, or they can even be physically abusive. But they may not even be aware of other people's boundaries. It's as if they live in a world where everything's got to be yes for them. And so they don't, you know, even process no. There's no place for no. These individuals are typically seen by most people as aggressive or bullies. And then there's a second type of controller called manipulative controllers. Now, these individuals may very well hear no, but they're going to work to persuade it into a yes. They indirectly manipulate circumstances in order to get their way. They may seduce and try to talk others into getting their way. They'll often use guilt messages to get people to do what they want them to do. Manipulative controllers often deny the fact that they're even controlling anybody altogether. They brush off their own self-centeredness. It's interesting that controllers can also be then avoidance and compliance. For example, they may need emotional support, but instead of seeking it and asking for it, they may seek it through manipulation. They may do somebody a favor in hopes that they get something in return for their favor, some sort of return on investment, that the person will somehow respond in love, you know, with love to their lives because they know they're missing that. So I'll do you a favor so that you hopefully respond to me with great gratitude and love, and I get my emotional needs met, but I didn't ask for it in a straightforward way. I'm kind of manipulating you to try to get what I hope you'll give me. Controllers tend to be undisciplined people. They tend to not take responsibility for their own lives. They tend to have very little ability to control their own desires, emotions, impulses. And they are often slaves to their own appetite. They often struggle with like delayed gratification. They want that need met now. And so they hate the word no They hate it because that means they don't get what they want in that moment. Controllers need to face consequences for their lack of responsibility. Now, what was interesting in the book that it drew out, the controllers often feel very alone. People tend to stay with them and feed their appetites and desires out of a fear of that person, out of guilt, out of a dependency. But controllers rarely feel love because deep inside they think that they actually know that people are only staying with them because they pull the strings. They manipulate them in order to stay. They may realize even somewhere deep inside that if I stop manipulating, I stop controlling, they may leave me. They may abandon me. And so on some level, they're aware of their isolation. They tend to latch on and look for someone who has those blurry boundaries so that they can be guilted and controlled into doing what they want. In 1 John 4 and verse 18, it tells us that fear involves torment. Fear brings about anguish. Fear brings about hurt. And then in the same verse, it tells us there is no fear in love. Good relationships are not ruled by fear. A relationship of fear is not a relationship of love. Type number 4. This is our last type. Another one that doesn't hear or recognize and respect the boundaries. These are called non-responsives. Non-responsives. And the definition, not hearing the needs of others. Not hearing the needs of others. In Sermon 2, we talked about that each of us have a responsibility to other individuals. Non-responsive show a lack of responsibility to love the other person. Now, when I was sitting writing this final touch this morning, I envisioned a husband sitting there. You know, he's worked his day, but he's sitting there at home. His wife's had an incredibly long night with the newborn child. He's sitting there. He's watching TV, relaxing. She's in there, got the newborn in one arm. You can just see she's exhausted. The baby's crying. She's trying to one arm make dinner. The diaper needs to be changed. And he's just unaware. He's not responding to anything going on with her and what she needs. He's not being responsible to her. Again, we are responsible to care about and help other individuals as we are able. We've talked in other sermons over the last year or so that within our sphere and circle, God designed us to have certain amounts of time, certain amount of resources, certain amount of dollars and energy. And within our ability to use that in our sphere, when we're able, we're supposed to help and do good to others and be there for them. To refuse or ignore when someone's being crushed by, one of these out of the blue boulders and we're just shut off from it. You know, it's not getting in. We're unaware. We're not noticing. We're not desiring to help. It could be you even have a critical spirit toward them for their needs and, ignore them. They're not my problem. They're their problem. You could be so self-absorbed into your own desires and needs that you're not responsible, again, to others. Not for others, to others. Philippians 2, verse 4 tells us, and this is another memory scripture, so I'll just keep moving through these. Philippians 2, 4, let each of you look out not only for your own interest, but also for the interests of others, right? God expects both of us. Take care of yourself. Look out for your needs, your energy, your resources, your time, but also look out for others. Be responsible to them. Think about them. Let their needs into your life. As we are able, and again, that's always the caveat, God fully expects us to help others, again, as we can. It's why this sermon series hasn't been a simple one-and-done sermon. We have to first understand what God modeled for us. What example did he set for us? How does he handle boundaries? How does he help showing up and helping people? What are our responsibilities? What do I do when somebody's not taking care of their responsibility? What if they're reaping the consequences of their choices? But also, how do I recognize when somebody has a boulder in their life that I'm expected by God to help with? So now in area four, we're just going to quickly define two types of main boundaries. Because I think some people, I spent a lot of sermon two talking about responsibilities. And some people go, well, that's about responsibilities, not about boundaries. But the two are closely connected. One type of boundary is called functional boundaries. Functional boundaries. Now, functional boundaries have to do typically with our responsibilities. Living our lives has to do with completing tasks, projects, going, you know, to our job, our various activities. Those functional things in our life, those responsibilities, they require us to perform. They require us to have discipline. They require us to have initiative and planning. And again, they tend to be around our daily backpacks. And even though I named this sermon series Relationship Boundaries, these functional boundaries impact our relationships. If somebody in your life isn't carrying their backpack, it's going to impact your relationship with them. So I spent much of sermon two on that area. Another type of boundary is called relational boundaries. Relational boundaries. These have to do with speaking truth to other people who we have a relationship with. Speaking truth to other people who we have a relationship with. Someone can have good functional boundaries. They can work hard. They can meet all their deadlines. They can get up on their own. They can take care and provide for their family. They're carrying their daily backpack. But then they can struggle with relational boundaries. They can struggle to tell a friend that it hurts them when they back out all the time on their commitments with them. Or it hurts me when every time we're supposed to meet, you show up 30 minutes late. Or, you know, I don't like something you're doing. So they can have good functional boundaries or functional ownership over their responsibilities, but poor relationship boundaries and vice versa. Someone can absolutely be honest with you. They can tell you all the things they don't like you to do to them and around them. And then they cannot get up for work on time every day, right? They can struggle in that, and that can impact you. Let's go ahead and stop there. We'll go ahead and have another hymn, and then I'll be back to bring this sermon series to conclusion with part four.